Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Voices in AI. This week, we are talking about Mo Gadot. He is formerly of Google and has gone on to do many of his own things, really in the path to better the world. He's written a number of books. One that we'll discuss is Scary Smart. I think he is a voice that, you know, similar to others that we've discussed in the past, like Tristan and Asia. We need to be hearing them and bringing them into the conversations that we talk about AI and the technology in the future.
Yeah, I think this guy is, I hadn't heard about him before. Someone had mentioned the video that I sent you with Stephen Bartlett that he did, the interview he did several months ago. And this guy is just, it's interesting because on one side, he's very zen. On the other side, he's terrified the way things are going. But he has a super interesting background. He's gallivanted around the world. He was born and raised in Egypt and spent some time there, but then went on to the Netherlands, of all places, to get his MBA degree. And then he ended up at IBM in Egypt. I didn't even know IBM had a space.
IBM's a global company.
Yeah, right? In Egypt. And that's where he started showing off some of his technical skills and like showing that he was pretty good at solving problems. And he got more into the tech space and the tech industry. And then he moved around again. He ended up in the UAE in the United Arab Emirates, where he was working in various roles, including ones at Microsoft. He was there for a while, and then he ended up joining Google in 2007. In particular, he was managing teams at Google X, which was, I don't think Google X is around anymore, but they were really focused on the more advanced technologies and innovations of Google. And he was the chief business officer there for a little while. So the man knows his stuff, but now he's out of the game and he's more sort of a thought leader and writer in the space rather than a producer around AI.
Yeah, which makes it very interesting, right? Similar to people like what you mentioned in that conversation with the Diary of a CEO, Jeffrey Hinton and others that are stepping away to really voice their concerns about what's happening. I thought the example he shares in his story and the Diary of CEO interview, which is a nice 2 hours, but well worth listening to, is, you remember he talks about the robot arms?
I think. Yeah. Those robotic arms, this is earlier on in machine learning, where they're trying to teach these robot arms to essentially pick something up with a certain amount of pressure. And they didn't think it was to pick up a ball, essentially. And they had these things running like all day, every day, and they were absolutely terrible and weren't doing the thing they were supposed to be doing. But he has this revelation because every day they get a little better and a little better and a little better until they're actually able to pick up that ball. And it might sound like stupid, especially now that we're way past that point and that milestone in not that many years. But for him, it was like almost like a religious experience of, oh my God, what are we doing here? This is working and this is terrifying.
And what impacted him in that moment, I think, was he said he came back into the office and shared, hey, look, it's been missing all these times. It's been like almost a 1 in a million or some crazy statistical chance. But once it learned, it quickly, for the time, was able to then become much more accurate in picking out that precise ball. And I think that's really the foremost thing that he calls out. The pace of its intelligence is growing. And it's what right now, we don't know. There's been a lot of talk about how there is a lack of understanding what is happening behind the black box of the AI. And when you consider that, it really changes the trust factor. And with somebody who's been more hands-on with it and understands really all the technical natures and its true rocket ship trajectory, I think he's right in some ways, in many ways, to raise the concerns that he does.
Yeah, it makes me think about, have you heard of the term grokking before?
Grokking. I've seen it, but I don't know what it actually means.
Yeah, so you've probably seen it or heard it because that's the name of X's bot. It's Grok, G-R-O-K.
That's why, yes.
And then also there was recently released a new chip architecture called Grok, G-R-O-Q. And although it's a funny name, it actually does have a reference in artificial intelligence and machine learning. And it's exactly the idea that you were just talking about, how these arms were like trying this a million times and weren't getting. And then one day it was like doing it perfectly. And this is what grokking is in essence, is there's this like point when you're training a model where you're not getting anything, nothing is happening. You're almost willing to give up. It's like, this just is not working. But if you push past that point, there is suddenly this exponential shoot up in terms of its learning, where it almost like a switch is flipped from 0 to 1 and it gets it. And then it's like, it gets yeah. it perfectly from that point on.
It's like a child in a sense. If you consider in the children's educational psychology theory, there are stages that, and the robot is able to probably race through those stages of faster.
Actually, not well. It depends on how you're defining faster, right? Because if you think about the amount of data that a machine needs to learn something compared to a human, there's actually an insurmountable chasm. Humans need significantly less data and input to learn a new task versus an AI, at least in those initial stages.
Even as an AI is proving to be more intelligent than 90% of the population, or I say it's like at 155 IQ. And
Einstein, how long would it take you to read the entire internet and then memorize it and use it for your whatever you say?
God, millions of years, right? But what I'm trying to, I guess, to ask is, does it need that copious amount? If it's doing the tokenization process and trying to predict what's next and best outcomes, does it not learn from that?
No, it learns because it needs the internet, essentially, or it needs a vast trove of textual data in terms of large language models to be able to predict the next token, because there's so much variability in language. So it needs to have this sense of, I need to predict the next word in this sequence. I'm either going to get it right or wrong based on what I'm looking at from the internet. And then that develops all the weights in the neural net that it passes through. When you do an input, it comes out with the output. It is an incredibly inefficient system. And like I said, there's like a lot of nothing happening in the first stage of that. It's not until the very end you get over this hump that it like finally gets it.
Got it. Okay.
Versus a human needs significantly less data and information to be able to speak language coherently.
Yes, I get that. But I guess what I was trying to ask is, as we are seeing that these AIs are becoming more intelligent in, let's call it, the measurement of IQ, right? Is that pace, the grok, or it's got nothing, is that short? Is there anything that hints at that?
It not.
And is that part of the reason these guys Hinton and Gadot are saying, ooh, we got to slow down? And Gadot throws out a really interesting one, man, I personally love, right? He throws out the idea, we can't slow it down, right? But his point is that the AI needs to be parented. And that's part of the reason that I made the child psychology analogy. And he makes a lovely analogy, two of them that I thought are important for people to understand or know about. The Superman analogy, right? Superman was raised by some good people in the middle of Kansas. Well, what if he wasn't? It turned out to be the Bizarro Superman.
There's a whole Superman comic where actually he falls in Russia. That's a completely different story.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. That's right. And then the other example is, which I think is brilliant, right? It may be dated for some people, but Tetris, right? When that block, when you're playing Tetris and you put it in the wrong place, it's just a sense of time until it all collapses. And what his point is that unless we provide the good parenting, the internet is being populated by, lack of a word, trash in many respects. There's so much bad content from fake journalism and things like that to just people who are snake oil salesmen, as he calls them, trying to make a quick buck. And the game of business is to make profits, and they're beholden to shareholders and all that stuff. Those negative elements of society are what he's calling out and saying, if that's what's going to be building our AI, then we got to slow it down. And the idea that he proposes, which I think is let's tax these AI businesses at 98%. So they're only making 2% of any of their money. That's going to slow them down pretty quickly. But he also rightly calls out that there will be places around the world that'll say, you know what? No, I won't tax you at 98%. You know, I'll tax you at 95 or even 10.
Yes. And then everyone will move there. or whatever. It's
And so his points are absolutely solid. And as he somewhere near the tail end of it all in that conversation, his point says, 2014, we're not hiding from the machines. We're hiding from the people who misused them and what they've created. And that is really the foremost thing that he's trying to bring out in Scary Smart and what he's talking.
Yeah, so
it's interesting.
So it makes it even more salient. You mentioned 2014. He actually lost his son, who was pretty young, in a pretty devastating way. It was like some routine procedure.
Appendectomy. It says on Wikipedia.
And his son passed away from the procedure. And that was absolutely devastating, I think, is what kind of turned him to this alternative path, or really was the straw that broke the camel's back here, of his child, and then developing this kind of philosophy and theory around the future of AI, around how we have to treat it like our child and really cultivate that alignment and that positive outlook and support of human beings, because these systems really are learning from what we feed them. And like you said, if we feed them garbage, we're going to come out with garbage, and no amount of reinforcement learning is going to be able to change that if you're starting from almost like a detached or sociopathic foundation. The way, if you ever read his book, Scary Smart, it's quite good, but it's interesting because he really goes deep into this route of, he almost frames it as he's talking to the future of AI. Like, he's talking to the artificial general intelligence. It's almost a book for that. And multiple times he's like, when you read this, I hope you know, like, he's literally talking to the future sentient AI that may or may not happen. And in some ways he's absolutely right, because again, we're training this on human language data. And so if we're feeding it a terrible diet of sugar and fat, it's not going to end super
processed
well.
Foods, you know where you're going to end up somewhere down the line.
But there's this problem, though, it's not even a problem, or just something to think about, is we're more or less running out of text data for these things. And so they're developing synthetic data. So they're essentially using, to this point about, you said, won't it grok faster? It's not so much it will grok faster so much as you can use the previous model to bootstrap the next model, where you start using GPT-4, for example, to generate a ton of synthetic data that is then rated or whatever and used and fed back into sort of the next model. And so that's what's happening now. And they are finding, at least in specific cases, that is working quite well. There's this open source model from Microsoft called Orca, which they have trained almost entirely, and Phi, which they've trained almost entirely on synthetic data around reasoning, like showing reasoning examples. And that has been working well. It outperforms models which are larger than it by almost like 2 to 3 times.
And that's for its capabilities then to create better, it'd be stupid and say sentences, right?
It's not, it's just sentences.
It's reasoning. I get that. I get that. I'm making fun of it as a marketer, right? That predominantly uses it for content generation. On marketing, I find it fascinating, and it'd be a really interesting thing to hear back from our small but growing subscriber base. If you are using in marketing, is it only for content generation? Are you doing it for any of the categorization and customer segmentation it can do? And where else are you bringing it into your analysis? Because to me, those are the three areas that AI fits in, research part of that as well. So maybe, but yeah, speaking still along those lines, not the reasoning side of things, with those capabilities of what it's going to be able to do. It's interesting, what's handcrafted anymore? And what's going to happen in this content generated, AI generated, content generated world? In their interview, chat, we can't call it 2 hour thing a chat.
Long form conversation.
Yes.
Their marathon.
They talk about two interesting music examples, right? You may not be aware of, but they're one of the first kind of plagiarism or cases was Drake's voice being used to record a complete AI song. And what that's caused some artists to say is, yeah, go ahead, use me freely and pay me royalties. And others say, absolutely not, I'm coming after you. And more critically, here in London, I don't know if it's spread around the outside of London, or the UK even. But APA has a whole concert that is AI holograms.
Really?
and it's supposed to be brilliant. A couple of our friends have gone, and Karen, being a huge APA fan, it's my wife. One day, I know I'm going to be watching this thing and probably enjoying it because it's, but how does that come across? If that's what's happening in music and entertainment, it's a short period away from what we as a society need to consider for everything. Hinton and others are calling about potentially across job losses, whole category. And it goes back to why he proposes the 98% tax. How do you slow that down?
Yeah. And the answer is you don't. And so we got to figure out how can we steer it in the direction that we want? How do we put guardrails in place to, because we've seen the images of Sora come out, that's only going to get better. Google just recently released this thing called Genie, which you just give it a picture and it'll essentially turn it into a platformer game like Mario, endlessly, like you can jump around on things and whatever. We're very quickly going to get to the point where a single person can create a Hollywood movie just on their computer in the cloud. But I think like all things, it's like there's going to be a balance where we're already starting to see this in terms of people going to the movies, right? People are getting really sick of the superhero movies and the overly generated CGI-ness of things. Yeah. I think there's going to be a space for both because like you said, we're going to open up the floodgates of creativity, but that also means there's going to be a lot of trash that comes out. A lot of people just trying to make a quick buck. And so people are going to, I think there's going to be a counterculture that arises of wanting something real, you know, something they can like almost touch and feel, but it's going to be wild.
I think handcrafted is going to become, you know, sought after, but will it be like vinyl records? People, those sort of audio files, right? The purists.
Yeah, it won't be the mainstream, but there will always be a place for it. The problem comes, can you afford it, right? Because now I can fully generate something for, let's say, a few dollars, whereas you're spending millions to create one episode of a TV show or something. It's like the economics there are heavily weighted in one direction.
Yes, it's true. So on that semi-negative note, I think what it really calls out is what are the incentives and the prioritization that the incentives that we give AI, and what is the prioritization that we as people give either governments or these AI companies directly for what we wanted to achieve? Because I think you, I, many others, including Mr. Gadot, believe that AI can't create the utopia, right? But it is just the bad parts of society and humanity that may steer it in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Moral of the story, put out good stuff, not trash when you're using AI. Don't be that snake oil salesperson. You're always putting your own flair on it and prepare for the future and begin inoculating yourself against what's going to be coming out there. Be wary. Thanks, Eldad.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, we'll see you all next week.
It's good to see you, Joseph.
Like we don't see each other all the time.
Very true.
Have a good one.
All right. Bye.